Welcome to SFH Presents, the one and a third podcast. I'm your host, Zach Polk.
And I'm Ty Southern.
We're going to start off by just giving you a little disclaimer, if that's all right. We intend to address mental health issues, talk to survivors, but we are not, in fact, mental health professionals. So if you're suffering from something that you need help currently, please reach out to the proper people, including a doctor, psychologist, whatever, therapist, your mother, whoever's your support system. Anyway, today we plan to, I guess we're going to just talk to Ty, get to know him a little bit, just kind of an intro to who we are. Episode two, we're going to talk to me a little bit. I get a feeling they're going to be a little bit of fucking everything, probably.
Yeah, I was going to say I'm not good at staying on subject, so.
I just said fucking in the first few seconds, so if this went on YouTube, we're demonetized already. It's the first podcast, and I've already messed it up. I'm ruining her. So, Ty, I mean, the first thing we would get into if we're talking to you, when a guy or a girl meets you, the first thing that they're going to say is like, something's different about this fella.
If they're good at math, they're going to realize pretty quickly that I'm three shy of a full set.
Oh, we went with the name One and a Third Podcast, so I'm not sure we're that good at math.
No, but the appropriate fraction was already taken.
Right, so we had to devise our own fraction.
We just had to go with a good sounding fraction.
So just to get right into that, get right into first of all, what happened? How did you end up with a fourth of limbs?
So this one time in Afghanistan, in 2007, straight out of high school, I went into the Marine Corps. The military is kind of the family business, so it was always the plan, really. And went ground option infantry. Made it through Iraq scot free. We were there from 08 to 09, or July 08 to February 09. And then my second deployment didn't go as smoothly. Basically, we went to Afghanistan in 2010, left March 5th. And on May 5th, I got ejected from the game.
Wow.
I ended up stepping on 10 pounds of homemade explosives, that was only buried 6 inches straight down directly beneath me. So
it was essentially similar to a landmine. Like, yes, you stepped on it and activated it.
Yeah. What they usually do or did at the time, at least, was these yellow jugs, and they'd pack them full of whatever stuff goes bang, bang. In my case, it was aluminum nitrate. They put two pieces of wood and simple wires, and then where when something steps on it, closes the circuit, boom.
Wow.
So technically it's called a victim operated pressure plate, IED. And, I don't like calling it victim anything. So
no,
I don't call it that.
Knowing you long enough to understand that about you, which kind of blows my mind, dude. Like, I sit over here with all my limbs depressed 99% of the time. I'm like, look at this fucking guy.
It's not a competition.
I get it. I've come to terms with it, but it's still hard to not like reflect on that and be like, yeah, fucking pick it up, bud. You know,
I've had this happen a few times because I'm a positive and upbeat guy. You've had your limbs
fall off a few times?
No. No, it was all the one time. I never broke a single bone ever. This is, it was literally my first go at breaking a bone.
Holy fuck, dude.
I dislocated my shoulders a bunch. I was a gymnast in real life. So both my shoulders popped out a few times and had some head injuries, just kid stuff. But yeah, never a broken bone.
So on this particular day when this happened, was it a situation? I mean, obviously, I know enough to know that you had to kind of be aware that there could be IEDs generally anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But were you particularly aware that maybe that could happen at that exact moment, or was it absolutely out of nowhere for you?
It was. So I don't remember any of it. Everything I know is secondhand. My brain control deleted kind of the day, and then they put me in a medically induced coma until the 18th. So I was out for 2 weeks. But So we were sent to a compound, which is just a walled in thing that has several buildings inside it. And we were told there are up to 6 Taliban higher ups, in the compound. So we were approaching the compound with the thoughts of getting into a firefight inside this thing. So, we were making sure there was no people outside. And then the guys who did the post blast said that the other 3 that were around the building that no one stepped on, were buried long enough ago that, the earth wasn't disturbed. They were really hard to see. They had to find them with the minesweepers and stuff. So yeah, it would have come completely out of nowhere. We weren't walking through a minefield and then the inevitable happened. We were trying to take out a compound and then resulted in one of us is going on a helicopter ride.
Wow. I've never wanted to be on a helicopter ride. And now I don't now I want to be on a helicopter ride even less.
They're a lot of fun, honestly. I've had the opportunity to do it when I wasn't dying a few times. And it is a blast when you didn't just have a blast.
When you rode on one, was it a military helicopter?
Yes. I've only been.
Did they play that Vietnam music while you were flying?
CCR. No, I wish that there was loud enough speakers in those things, but they're not as cool as in our head we were hearing CCR. But yeah, I've been on Ospreys, the one with the big open back door and the wings that can turn into a dang plane.
Oh yeah, exactly what you're talking about.
And Sea Stallions and a couple of stuff like, and then for training and things, we did others. And since I've been injured, I've been packed onto helicopters as a casualty, as an actor, for medic training.
Wow. Well, you just said that you didn't remember that you deleted the day and then you were in a medically induced coma, but you were at least told, you know, what happened after the explosion. What was that? What was the story with that?
So I was approaching the doorway. We all missed the first IED. There was one on the front corner that I was leading my team around to, and either it didn't go off properly, which is what I think, or we all somehow missed it. And then going to kind of snap into the doorway, it's called turkey peeking, so that you would surprise whoever's on the other side of the door, really. When I was going to do that, I stepped on the other one. So it bounced me off the building. They immediately got the corpsman and the squad leader and a couple other hands in the middle, and then did a security cordon around the area and eventually figured out that the 2 of the security guys, if they'd have rolled the other way when they stood up, they'd have hit the other 2.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so it was a very, very well planned out ambush, and it was a great trap, and they never sprung it. So like there was no opposition after I was injured, which resulting I wouldn't have made it. And then my squad leader called in a helicopter faster than a hiccup. You have to do to get the helicopter to your position, you have to do a 9-line report, which is the 9 lines of information the helicopter needs to get to you, grids and if they can walk, stretchers, blood types, things like that, so they get there with all the appropriate crap.
Right.
And my squad leader called it in so fast, one that was coming in for torn ligaments and an ankle got rerouted to me. So I was only on the ground dying for 10, 15 minutes before I was on a helicopter and heading for an actual medical hospital.
Wow. And once you hit the hospital, obviously they went right to work.
So when they were stretchering me off, my squad leader got my right hand off the ground. Because was, it
is
made
that
it.
On the, is that back on the shelf behind you?
That is a passive prosthetic arm that I actually wore on my wedding day. But yeah, I love that thing.
Up trophy, it's up dude.
You know, people hunting people. It's a thing. Google it.
as long as people hunting people got other people hunting people that they can shoot at, I'm happy for it. Although I feel like there's better ways to solve issues sometimes.
Something. Hash it out in the field.
Sometimes you gotta shoot a motherfucker.
Just do a duel. But yeah, so he put my right hand on my chest when they were putting me on the helicopter because he didn't know what science could do. Didn't know if they could just like bolt it to the end of my arm or something. Or and he said he'd be damned if it ended up on someone's mantle. And I was just I love that. As my boy. But so yeah, we get to Bastion, probably would have been the first stop, one of the hospitals in Afghanistan. And someone's pumping my chest into the OR, rolls off, someone else rolls on, starts pumping my chest to get in there. At that first stop, they did a thoracotomy. They had to hack open my ribs to clamp my aorta and then get my heart going again because it kept stopping for various reasons, mostly lack of blood.
I was going to say, you couldn't have came away with a large portion of your blood.
Oh, no. They lost count on 160 units of blood. And I'm told that's enough to have bled out completely thrice.
I don't know how much blood that is, but if I act like I know, it makes me sound really smart.
No, I just put it. I put it in the layman's for you. That's enough to have bled out all the way, three times. Yeah. So I was. There was a point when I was completely British blooded, because they ran out of American O plus.
So are like hospitals like that? Are they limited on like what they can do there? Do they have to keep you alive and then transport you to somewhere that had like more advanced techniques to further everything?
Kind of. So the men and women, obviously the doctors that do the trauma surgeons are trained in all the stuff, and they have their training that they go by, and all of their training said, cut this one off. I'm the first American triple amputee to survive Afghanistan.
Wow.
Which isn't something I ever really wanted to put on a resume. No. But they all at every hospital, the three along the way to Bethesda, all said it's all he's got left. Let's see what they can do at the next hospital.
I could definitely think better ways to get your 15 minutes of fame. You know what I mean?
For show, for show. I'd have rather stuck around and fought. But, you know. That was actually my thing, was I was so damn – I was more upset when I woke up that I couldn't go back and keep doing work than I was that I was broken. I had boys I trained that had to do the most of the deployment without me. And that shit, that cut me deeper than any of the wounds did. So they did the thoracotomy there where they had the first hospital. And I've spoke to that particular surgeon since. And he, I remember when you got on our table, we were going to cut you open. We knew we were going to immediately cut your chest open. It was either you were definitely going to die or you were probably going to die. And I'm just like,
fuck, dude.
Decisions. So let's go with probably. It panned out. Obviously,
but you did have to be brought back more than one time, right?
I'm told that I stopped breathing on the ground. I'm told that, which I don't know if that was a full flatline, but they had to get my rhythm back a few times on the ground. And then every hospital said that my lungs collapsed several times and that I flatlined several times. I wish I had a list of my times of death.
Yeah, that'd be even cooler for a resume.
That'd be way better for the resume. The other ones.
Lots of times.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm going to stick around.
That's pretty wild, man. Like when you think about, you know, modern medicine in general, some of the crazy things they can do. But like, imagine, you know, just the scenario. Like I said, in my head, you're not going to like the Mayo Clinic or some, you know, like some great hospital that's, you know, someplace that's well prepared. And I'm sure being that they're in combat, they're prepared for horrific things.
They're mostly prepared for what's going to gunshots and explosions and combat related injuries are the main thing they're prepped and ready for. And I don't actually know the extent of like how much blood they keep on tap and stuff like that. But everyone I've been to is a good hospital. And Bethesda is the premier prosthetics lab in the country. which is where Marines and, well, now everybody, but at, when I got injured, Marines and sailors went to Bethesda because it was a Navy hospital. And then when you were ready for therapy, you'd travel to Walter Reed. And then okay. They're now the same base. They're the same hospital now. Yeah. So if you were mostly burnt up, you'd go to Brooks in San Antonio. And then if I don't know why you'd want to, but there's also Balboa, in California, in San Diego. And, I don't know why you'd want to go there, but it was an option apparently.
Do you think it was easier for you to remain such a positive guy because your junk was still intact afterward?
130,000%. Yes. Sure. I'd be a whole different dude if that got snipped, ripped, blown off.
Then you would feel like you're like, I don't know why you saved me.
Yeah, I was going to just call it. I'm fine.
No reason for me to stick around.
Just let me go.
So you said I guess your family was military.
Yes.
So you going in, I guess, for years leading up to that was probably, was it more of a, like, I got to follow in their footsteps, or just something you just really loved and wanted to do?
And there was no big pressure put on any of us to do it. We all wanted to. We all strove to get out of high school so we could serve. I'm the youngest of three. My oldest brother went Navy, and my whole life, I wanted to be Navy as well, because our father did 20 years in the Navy. And my oldest brother went search and rescue swimmer, one of the fourth hardest job in the Navy. They get to wear the khaki short shorts, which not everyone gets to wear. You got to be a badass to wear the short shorts.
Gym teacher.
No. Again, they're khaki, they're almost dress short shorts. They're a real specific thing, and it's just and it works. And again, my brother's thighs work too. He's got big old tree trunks, so like he can rock them. But I was going to do search and rescue. That was my plan for a long time. I was going to not so much follow in his footsteps, but I didn't want to sit behind a desk. I wanted to go do stuff.
Right.
And then my senior year of high school. And my middle brother went Army, but we went kind of at the same exact time. He did life and dug pools and had jobs and stuff after high school. Even though he's 3 years older than me, we ended up going into the military the same year, but he went Army and then I ended up going Marines. It was my senior year of high school. My best friend was going in the Marine Corps, and he had to go to the recruiter all the time. When you've already signed up and you're a poolee, which is what you are when you've signed up but you haven't left yet. You got to check in all the time. There's like weekly PT and stuff like that. And his recruiter, we just got to talking, and it just, all of it sounded like more up my alley. And my father was a recruiter for 11 of his 20 years. He can sell rubbers to a monk.
Your father?
Navy. He was an engineer, a machinist mate. They keep the engines running. He was on the Forrestal and the Bigelow. And people who know naval history, the Forrestal was an old ship in 1985. He was the first ever engineer to be named Sailor of the Year on the USS Forrestal in 1985. Yeah, it was already a very old ship in 1985.
Wow.
So that's my dad. But yeah, I basically was like, I don't want to go Navy and come home and be like, oh my God, I just did this and got this score on whatever. I did that shit 30 years ago. I did that shit last week. And then just like, So I liked the idea of going somewhere where no one could talk shit. They still do, but.
Was it difficult with your brother enlisting at the same time as you and going a different branch?
Difficult isn't the word. We were estranged isn't the right word either. We were not on great terms back then. And being dragged to Oklahoma to see him graduate from boot camp was a point of contention for me at the time.
Okay.
Ultimately, I'm glad I saw it. I'm glad I was there for it. And a big milestone in his life where he became a soldier and ended up in the Army. He met his wife and they got two beautiful children. My nephews are badasses. So, I mean, in retrospect, I'm elated that I got a chance to be there for that. At the time, I was grumbling the whole road trip from Florida to Oklahoma.
Yeah. I've made pretty much that same drive to Missouri several times, and it's not great.
Yeah, state of misery. That's actually where he lives now. He lives in St. Louis.
Does he?
Shit, he's only well, I apologize. Did I just say St. Louis?
Yeah.
Kansas City.
Oh.
Yeah, sorry. As soon as I said it, I was like, that's not right. Yeah, Chiefs.
Yeah. Well, there's no other football team you can root for here. I'm not a Chiefs fan. I'm a free agent, but once the Rams left, it was like, whatever.
I'm not a sports fan, really. I like to mess with people who are like going hard in the paint at sports stuff. We went to the Subway Series where the Mets played the Yankees. Mm-hmm. And I was cheering for like the Cubs and the O's the whole time, and like had all these people just like wanting to murder me. Like it was hysterical.
Dude, I spent this whole summer, we were in Delaware. I knew most of those people were, Eagles and Philly fans, and plus 80% of Bachman's fans are Philly fans. And I love just talking shit. I don't really care. I just like talking shit.
I was going to say a lot of important people in my life are Phillies fans and Philadelphia in general fans. So I can't hate on them. That's because I love my people.
Yeah, you love your people. It's not their fault that they have the worst fans in sports.
I've not seen the study.
But JD Drew, when JD Drew was a baseball player that played for the Cardinals, he had been drafted by the Philadelphia team the year before. And decided not to play with him, went back into the draft. Cardinals drafted him. And the first time he played outfield in Philly, they threw D batteries at him from the stands. I mean, they used to have at their football stadium, they used to have a jail and a judge during the games.
I heard that too. And for a long time, I thought it was like an urban legend.
It's fucking bananas.
My oldest brother was born in Philadelphia. So like we got to like Philly growing up too.
Okay.
Just like we got to hate the Colts. My well, father was born and raised in Baltimore. So 1983 was a dark year. We hate Mayflower moving trucks, and we hate the Indianapolis Colts. And there's no reason why Johnny Unitas should be in their Hall of Fame, because he never played for the Indianapolis Colts. He only played for the Baltimore Colts. This was drilled into my head from an early age.
Dude, I love the, you know, it's like I'm mostly a hockey fan, but like I run into people of other, you know, fans of other teams, talk shit. But in general, I love that people love something. Like, I don't really give a shit.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean
when your
so
passion
much.
For it makes you just wildly obnoxious. I'm not trying to be around you when you're in heat. when you're doing your thing.
There's grown men that go into a 3-day depression when their team loses on Sunday. It's like, what the relax.
I don't get all that crap. If I end up watching a movie or a show that puts me in a shitty headspace, I just watch something else good after. Like, right. But yeah, also, I mean, and so that's part of it, is getting all hyped up about all that to the point of like rage inducing psychosis doesn't make much sense to me. It's not like I'm always on the positive side of stuff. So like, yeah, I hope both teams have fun.
Yeah. I mean, I care. Like I watch a hockey game and they lose. I'm like, oh, fuck, you know, like, but I don't, I've been a Blues fan for 30 plus years and I never thought I'd see them win. They won a cup in 2019. I had my family around me. We all cried together. It was awesome. But
Blues is hockey. Emotional.
Yeah. It's about as emotional as I'll get for something like that.
Hockey's the one that has the most toughness. Out of the major sports for sure. A lot of that flopping crap makes me sad. So I like highlight reels
either
way.
World Cup soccer. You don't get away with it in hockey too much. They don't flop too much. Some of the European players. And Sean Avery. It's a weird reference for anyone that knows hockey, they'll laugh, but everyone else like, who the fuck are they talking about?
Yeah, I was gonna say I don't know who that is. I don't know.
He's just a scumbag.
Wayne Gretzky. That's one of the Mystery Alaska. One of my
my head right now that's just pissing me off.
Sincerest apologies.
I want to get out my anti-aircraft weaponry.
Salt gun.
So back to what we were saying. So yes. Yeah. And I mean, when you originally said the story about your brother, in my head, it was like, you know, you guys were talking about it. You're going in to enlist together and whatever.
Oh no, it wasn't really together. It was what I was doing after high school. So I graduated on a Friday and left on a Monday. I was a week into training a week after high school.
Damn.
And turned 18 at boot camp. Cause
Did
I went,
you have
in,
any,
yeah, I went in at
any
17.
Regrets about that?
Not one. Just about joining the military in general or the Marine Corps.
No, about like just going straight from school and jumping in.
No. I like how everything panned out in the grand scheme. Yeah. My life is pretty spectacular now. So if I waited the summer or something, I potentially would have been in a different unit and deployed at a different time.
Right.
My kids exist because I got blown to smithereens.
Okay.
So like I wouldn't trade it for literally anything in the world.
You know, it's a lot easier to get people pregnant than to, you can just not wear a condom and people get pregnant.
Yeah, but those ones wouldn't be these ones.
That's true.
Like, yeah. I would say even if we conceived a different weekend or whatever, like it would have been a whole different kid.
Been so different. Yeah, it is hard when you really think about shit that happens in your life. And I say this to people all the time, but I have a hard time like remembering it when I need to most. But all the shit you go through shape you into the exact person you're meant to be this exact moment of this day. You know what I mean? Like it's hard to, you know, go back and say, well, I wish this wouldn't have happened or I would have done this different, because then think of all the things, this conversation might not be happening. It's like all the different things that we do, even when it's shitty, is just part of your story, dude.
Oh yeah. There's a whole bunch of stuff that I kind of wish played out differently as far as like things I said at a certain point. Or like things I thought were one way and get y'all red in the face when you think about it at 3 a.m. But like nothing life altering or change, like joining a different branch, doing a different job, sidestepping instead of walking straight. Like the big stuff, I'm glad it played out the way it did. There's days that suck. But
how big are those plates usually? The trigger plates?
Oh shit. It really depends on how they're doing, what they're doing. It's usually just like literally two pieces of wood that they've buried.
Okay.
That have the metal in between them to close the circuit. Something they can hide easy. So like it wouldn't be two by fours.
Right.
But yeah, so they vary. It just like in your head, you're seeing a circular thing with a thing in the middle that steps in and goes boom. That's a thing that exists. But yeah, they would literally just whatever, like if they didn't have the yellow jugs, they'd probably just use whatever milk cartons or whatever they could pack stuff into and put blasting caps in, wire it to the wood as soon as something steps on it and closes the circuit. But blam, blam.
Damn. Yeah. I mean, looking at the way they wage war or defend themselves, depending on your angle, and in Afghanistan, Iraq, similar to Vietnam, where it's not high tech weaponry. It's just,
look, those are the bad guys. Let's go get them. It all is basically still Charlie behind a tree kind of thing.
Right.
Or like you meet the Sheikh and he could end up having, you know, ill intent or be in someone's pocket or, you know, everyone in town, no one's wearing I'm the bad guy uniform.
Right.
So, I mean, literally everybody could just be telling you what you want to hear because they're scared of the Taliban or Al-Qaeda too.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it's a lot of, there's a lot of figuring out what's what and then figuring out what's what again, like, because intel shook all the time.
So, which, you know, saying all that is very similar to how Vietnam worked, where it was, the people working the rice fields were coming out at night as soldiers. You know, there was a blurred line between who your enemy was and who was a civilian.
Exactly. Every other war before that, the bad guy was wearing something specific. They had a more organized uniform. Look about them. So you knew they were the one.
Right.
And then, it all changed then. And freaking,
let's all freaking blow up somebody or maim somebody so that everyone could get ambushed when they're helping the one that got maimed, which was the standard operating procedure when I was there. So it is a miracle that my boys were not wrecked, because if they took fire, I wouldn't have survived.
That's wild.
The EOD technician who did my post-blast analysis straight up said that there shouldn't have been pieces of me to find, and how it bounced me off the building is the only way I made it, because it got me out of the blast radius.
Fuck, dude. That's wild.
Like,
so when, you know, I know you enough now to know that you're, you know, you look at things very positively considering what you went through, but did you have times where it was darker or that you dealt with PTSD or anything along those lines?
So I've always said I have PTSD, but I don't suffer from it. I can go in a crowd. I have to mentally prepare for it. But like, I can do that. I can be around fireworks. And I just, you know, I was not traumatized big time. I don't have nightmares because I don't remember what happened to me. And I didn't have really the opportunity to do a whole bunch of fighting to where I would have done or something that would have haunted me. We had a bunch of firefights before the one where I was injured, but I don't have anything that keeps me up at night.
So you probably in the time that you were there didn't see a lot of your brothers die and things like that.
I was the first big injury. We lost 13 total on the deployment. And I don't actually know the injured count. I know there was 8 or 9 gunshots and 7 or 8 amputees. But yeah, there was a graze. A round went through a dude's cargo pocket and bruised up his leg real bad while we were doing something on the side of the trucks. Was the only thing I was there for, basically. Which all he had to do was change his pants and make sure that the bruise, you know, whatever.
But yeah, so I ended up being the first one people had to deal with.
So do you think people that deal, you know, that come back from a war, a combat type situation, who deal with like a more intrusive form of PTSD, do you think a lot of that centered around what happens to the people around them? Is that what they tend to struggle with the most, or is it
survivor's guilt is a ridiculous thing? Not that people have it. It invades your brain.
Yeah.
Like a creeping moss. Like hell, the man who called my helicopter, put the hand on my chest. He's a man that I named my son after. Wow. He went down a dark road after he got out of the military, because he was guilt stricken about me.
Wow.
Because he was the squad leader, and if he'd have took his team around, I wouldn't have got hurt. And in his head, it had to be a show. I, you know, the positivity is just the highlight reel I show people. I ended up having to, it was years after both my kids existed. And we went to Sturgis. He lives in Tennessee. So me and my dad drove up, picked him up, went to Sturgis, had a blast. I got my motorcycle. I brought him on stage, introduced him to the crowds at Sturgis. And he got to spend 2 weeks with me. And wow. In the 2 weeks, the only thing that I like got heated about and ended up getting silly about was an argument me and my dad had about some me and my dad shit. And then Pop got out the truck and went to like check in or do something. And I'm sitting there with Ty. And I was just like, see? And he looked at me like, cause he was just sitting there in the back seat while we're arguing, like he's going to interject. I was like, see? And he looked at, what? I was like, anything that bothers me, gets under my skin, gets me emotional and silly is normal human shit. It has nothing to do with this. Like, so like he got to spend 2 weeks with me and realize that like it wasn't some mask I was carrying around.
Right.
Whenever I'm low and hating life and just meh, sometimes you just need a cry. Watch Saving Private Ryan. Get it done. But when I get in a low point, that's the mask. that's the bullshit I need to figure out how to wash off my face.
Right.
Because that ain't me. And sometimes you got to take a dip anyways. Like, I think that's natural and healthy. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, you can't just be sunshine and rainbows all the time.
Well, and it's something we talked about beforehand. We obviously want to, you know, shine light on survivors of all types and mental health issues of all types. But in particular, being that we're both men, we both understand how difficult it is for some men to ask for help or to be okay with crying or sitting with something or leaning on somebody. Where it's just this thing culturally where we feel like men aren't allowed to that it's weakness.
Show weakness.
Right. Which is silly. I mean, the rate of you know, men suicide versus women is it's horrific. I mean, more women should kill themselves. No, I'm just kidding.
He said jokingly.
No.
Oh, no.
Obviously, that was a joke.
But I think that a grown man that can't cry hasn't been through shit. And the not being able to versus not allowing yourself to are obviously two different things as well. So, I mean, my dad helped build the old school. He had the blueprints in the closet growing up. So, like, that was – and his parents died when he was really young. And he was the middle of six. So he had to help raise folks, too, when he was pretty young. So my dad always had that, you know, be there dependability. You could call him and he'd show up. And if he couldn't show up, he knew someone who was going to show up for you. He's got people in every corner. He's a networking genius. He just knows everybody. But it's only recently that he's realizing mortality and becoming more emotionally available and stuff. And it's awesome. But that's something people need to learn how to do a lot younger.
Yeah. No, I agree with that 100%. It does seem, even with myself, I'm 47, you know, I'm no spring chicken, but I'm also not hopefully knocking on death's door. But my mortality is, and also because of my depression and suicidal ideation and how close I've come to those things, have made me probably think a lot deeper about it than most people.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's easy to just avoid things like that and avoid those emotions to not just make it about men. I've noticed a lot more and more over the last decade or so that more and more women are becoming the, I don't want to cry, I can't show weakness kind of thing too. It's not just exclusively men.
Just everybody. Right? Hey, everybody, you're allowed to cry. You need to let it out sometimes.
You're allowed to be vulnerable.
Sometimes you just got to watch whatever movie gets it out of you. Yep. Like in my head, I'm still a child with how I visualize things sometimes, but I always feel like if I'm having a really rough time with something, it's because I haven't cried in long enough. And like, there's a reservoir somewhere that needs to be emptied so that I can feel lighter. So I'll watch Saving Private Ryan. And at the end, whenever I'm good until the very end, when he's all like, tell me I'm a good man to his wife. And I just, I ugly cry. There's some movies that'll get me to well up, and I'm like, got me a little bit. But no, the end of Saving Private Ryan, I'm gonna cry my eyes out. If I was gonna watch Taking Chance again, if I wanted to put myself through that, that's the whole movie you're crying. So I mean, sometimes you just got to figure out what'll get you there. Put on that song that drives you crazy. Eat your brownies and have a good time.
When I was going through my divorce, this is a long time ago, but I was really struggling with a lot of it, as most people do. And my therapist told me, which I thought was really helpful, to try to like take the things that you need to deal with, such as you're talking about, and literally visualize, you know, sit with them, feel them, and then visualize putting them in a shoebox, putting a rubber band around it, put it under your bed. But get it out every once in a while.
Yeah.
You got to get it out every once in a while and look through it a little bit and go through that, because pressing everything down and avoiding everything just doesn't lead you to a better place.
It's very Irish of you.
It's like putting duct tape on your mouth when you need to puke. It's coming out somewhere.
Oh, God.
Might not have been the best.
That hurts my nose thinking about it.
Oh, good. That's terrible.
Just do what you got to do, man. That's
all. Yeah, get it done, damn it. Right. Yeah, I was going to say, literally everybody, that is something that I recommend any person to do, is just every once in a while, do whatever triggers all of that. Feel the feelings. And then, yeah, if you got to hang out and have a powwow or a board meeting with your demons, and then you put the ball gags back on them and put them back in the closet. Like, just sometimes you got to face them and tell them to go fuck themselves. And that, well, I run this shit.
Yeah. You know, the other thing, and I know you'll agree with this, it's important to have a support network, whether it be friends, family, or a friend, or it doesn't have to be a large group of people. I remember going through some of my darkest times. I felt utterly alone. And it wasn't even just that I couldn't be around people, but I felt like all I was doing was dragging other people down, and that by telling my truth was just hurtful to everyone else. But that's not the truth. That was in my head. And I think a lot of people think that way too, where it's like, I don't want to
be a burden.
Right. I don't want to burden you with this. And especially for someone like me, who most people know, because I've been pretty vocal about my depression, where they feel like saving me from their trouble helps me, but it's quite the opposite. I found that the more time that I put into helping other people with what I was going through, the better I felt about myself and the better I felt about my life. So
on the nose, that's all. Yeah. If I am dealing with something and I have the opportunity to assist somebody with pretty much anything, it ends up having to word it the right way, or not so much lawyer it, but like say it in the manner that they can fully understand. Cause mine is always, someone's comparing is why they can't talk to me about it.
Right.
Oh my God, you've been through X, Y, and Z. There's no way I'm going to complain to you about this. And I'm like, it is not a competition at all. And I'm not you. Your life experiences are very different. If the divorce was your IED, like, then that's what your divorce was to you. And I'm here to talk about the trauma of it and what it did to you. I don't care if it was something from when you were 8 and the clown was too much at the freaking birthday party. Like, if that's the root of your trauma for real, let's go. Let's dig in. Let's talk about it. And if just getting it off your chest usually does it better than 90% of the other stuff, just getting it out there, verbalizing it, admitting it's real.
Yeah. And I think society has a tendency, people have a tendency to not be understanding of the fact that people see life through different lenses. We don't all see life exactly the same. So in other words, like, you don't have to imagine that because of what you went through, that what I'm going through isn't important, because we all have a different level of tolerance. We see things just like, how hot do you like your shower? It might be entirely different from mine. And every woman I've ever been in a relationship with likes hot, the water literally like it came from the pits of hell, hot,
scalding.
Which I don't understand how they do that, but
it helps melt their stress away, Zachary.
Whatever it is. So it's like being able to look at, I learned a lot from Joe Bachman this year, where I really kind of sat with and learned about some of the things he goes through, which we're actually going to talk about probably in episode 3 or 4 with Joe.
Joey B.
The more I learned, the more I understood his actions that in times before had irritated me. And once I understood that, I was like, oh man, like, I'm kind of the asshole here a little bit, because I didn't put the time in to understand. And then it made me think about how often I do that with other people in life. Like, how often do I look at other people and look at their actions and get upset, get angry, or even write them off or something. You know what I mean? Where in reality, they're just dealing with something that I don't understand. And it's not my place to tell them, well, you just have to do this. You know, which I find a lot of people want to take that route, even with my son, who's got Tourette's, where it's like, well, just don't say those words. Like, it doesn't work that way. That's like telling Ty to just stand up and walk on his legs that aren't there.
Hold still.
Right. It's it's I think people just need to be a little more aware of that. It's easy to get caught up in just the way the lenses you see life through. In other words, you know, absolutely. Like you have to be able to understand that you aren't going to understand how it feels to be someone else when it comes to a lot of things. And that's okay. You can be there
trying to doing your best to get it. Is that's what's called empathy.
Right.
Like, just
do your best to understand and relate. But in reality, that's not even necessarily what they need. They just need someone to listen and give a shit.
I was like, going to say, 80, 90% of whatever it is just the fact someone's there and knowing someone's there.
Yep.
Ends up being the mountain that needs to be climbed is right. just realizing that someone does care and someone's here to listen to you. Who cares if it's about the fuzzy bunny? Like, just talk about it. If it's real to you, it's real to me. And we are going to have a conversation.
Yeah. And sometimes you got to talk about it often and the same thing often. And sometimes you might spend the rest of your life talking about it often. That's okay.
I do. I do that. If I apologize, like there's a few people who've heard the same story about 700 times or like different versions of a specific problem. My closest friends have been down this road with me a few times and I'll do that. I'll be like, hey, I know we've been through this, but, and they're, you know, all right, cool. And I was like, I don't want you to feel a need to say something new, but here it goes. Like, and I just, you sit there and nod.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for me, it's been like matters of relationships that weren't going well or that ended where I definitely sounded like a broken record to everyone around me, but it was, sometimes you, when you sit with things, like they run through your head. And I know I'm an overthinker where it's just like, I play out scenarios and conversations and what I could have done different, what I should have done different and drive yourself nuts. And sometimes you need to just say it to somebody and have them reflect that back to you. Sometimes they tell you, you need to fucking quit. Dude, this gnat is driving me batshit.
That or end up having a long argument with nobody in the shower.
Yeah,
you just got to practice what you should have said.
I'm a masturbation. Long argument.
I'm a major league overthinker myself, so I absolutely understand that crap.
It's an easy thing to get into, and I'm quite sure that a lot of people deal with it. But it's also, I know a lot of people that don't deal with it, and you end up, I've been in relationships with girls who just can't understand how to deal with an overthinker.
Well, yeah.
It's probably exhausting.
Oh, I know. Yeah. And I'm over here like, it's easy. All I got to do is reassure me of X, Y, and Z every once in a while. Yep. Like, and then in my head, that seems super easy. And then like, and to be cognizant of that, sometimes I'm just like, hey, I could use a reminder of thing B. Thing B, please. Like, can you remind me real quick?
It seems so simple, but for a person that doesn't think that way, again, we'll go back to they see life through different lenses and they're just not able to like understand that's just that simple, that your brain just works in a way that you need to be like reinforced. And it's probably not the best thing in the world, but it is what it is.
Yeah. Like, no, it's just like when you have certain love languages that don't line up, where you're loving them in your love language, not theirs.
Right.
Yep. Kind of thing.
That's hits that on the head with the lenses thing, where there are a lot of people I know like that who just can only love in the language that they see.
Yeah. I was going to say touch is mine. So yeah, I'm a touch. And I was going to say, that needs to be addressed.
Right.
So like, you know, like if yours is acts of service or whatever else it is, like I need to know so I can get on board with it. And if I can't, we need to get off this train early
before the casualties are more.
But how many times in society do you look around and see relationships where neither party are getting their love language fulfilled? Where it's like they agreed to do it to win the person over, get the marriage, get the house, do whatever. And now they're not following through on the things that they got there for.
That's sort of all of them. Like that's most of them.
It kind of blows my mind that, you know, I'm, I'm a fairly lonely person. Like, I'm a hopeless romantic too. I want to be in love. I want to be in a relationship, but I absolutely will not settle for something that I know is going to fail. What the fuck's the point?
Preach.
It's crazy how often it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a matter of finding the magical person that just does everything right accidentally. It's a matter of finding somebody that's got a good foundation to build on and then learning how to fulfill each other through communication and honesty.
What he said.
Communication is the absolute key to all of it. Cause that is something that will drive me up a freaking wall quick. If they're sitting on something, like if we're together, if I'm dating this person and we're working towards, you know, living our lives together. And you got something in your head that I'm doing that sucks. I don't wake up any morning thinking I'm going to piss her off today.
Right.
Like, I'm going to do everything that makes her very angry only. Like, no, I want to make you smile in the morning. I want to do this. I want to do that. I want to be helpful. If 100%. I'm doing something that's pissing you off, it's not on purpose. So why don't you tell me? And then I'll know and I'll crack open the tie schematics. I'll tinker around a little bit. Like, and I will stop. And like, if it's a bad habit, give me a minute. Like, if it's something that is that's ingrained, give me a little while, please. Have some understanding. Like, but communication. If you don't talk about shit, you know,
they never argued.
Why'd they fail?
No, that's exactly why they never. They failed. You know, obviously.
Because they never argued.
Right.
You got to make love work. So sometimes it's a knockdown dragout.
But it's how you fight too. I always tell my kids, my daughter constantly, I'm like, look, any two people can find some common ground to get along on, but how you deal with conflict says everything about your compatibility.
It is you and me against the problem. Yep. It is not you versus me because of this problem. And that's the main freaking thing. If I'm getting called names, or if I'm just what my point is just not even being respected, I'm just like, I don't need this crap. I'm done. Like I would say, we'll address it. If it don't get worked on by the next time we argue, boom. Like that's officially a stake in the ground, red flag. Like we need to work on it, or we ain't doing this. Like
yeah, and you can say
a 9 and a 7 year old. I'm not trying to freaking waste time. Anyone I'm trying to see, I'm hoping for the long haul.
Right. Yeah, and you know, and through all that. You definitely can apply everything that we just said to friendships, to family ships, to your co-parent,
to 100%.
Like all of it. Like it's crazy how many people, but it does come back to a thing that I posted about on Facebook the other day where basically, you know, people go out and put on a face to impress a bunch of people that they don't even give a shit about. And when they do meet someone they want, they'll try to give the best of themselves versus show all the dark corners of their life. And I do exactly the opposite because I want you to see the things that would push you away. I don't want to waste time. Like I want you to see the rawest, deepest parts of me. And it's surprising how few people can tolerate, I don't know if tolerate's the right word, but can handle that.
Yeah.
Want someone that's going to put the face on.
No. And I totally get that. That's my lying is a young man's game. Like I'm not trying 100%. To remember what I told who. Like I've done it. Obviously, I'm an excellent liar. I'm not proud of that. I'm a very skilled liar though, and it was something I was proud of when I was a young man. And I don't know why.
It's
like I don't know who that kid was anymore. But I'm gonna tell you up front, X, Y, and Z. This is me. You're not getting some highlight reel at the beginning. I'm going to Scooby-Doo mask and be like, oh, this is really me. Like, no, I want you to do that too. Take your mask off, freaking put your armor down and let's talk. And then if we like what's going on, then let's move on from there. Like, but God, the either fighting through walls or someone can't put up with X, Y, or Z from me. And I'm just like, oh, I'm sorry. That's part of who I am as a person. So
yeah.
Bye.
Yeah. I obviously don't think, you know, people in relationships should come in with the idea they're going to change a person, but you do grow. You do want to like grow to that person and learn how to, there's a compromise in there.
I was going to say it's give and take.
Right. But you need the opportunity to do that with communication and honesty, and that
100%. No one's going to be a perfect match. This ain't Disney. This ain't freaking some rom-com. Like,
right.
Everyone's going to have to like shave off some rough edges. But if you need me to break off a piece to become a specific shape for you, I don't know if we're going to play that game. But yeah, you got to sand and shave so that you can fit together, and then hopefully grow together as a team.
Right. Exactly.
I didn't mean to just punch the microphone. Sorry.
It's all good. It was a 3D. Cool.
That's the, obviously the goal is to have, you know, form one vessel, travel together.
Right. And again, like I just can't reinforce enough. I know how hard it is to just be a brutally honest person all the time. But I remember when I decided that was what I was going to be at some point, where I was like, I'm just going to fucking say what I mean and what I feel all the time. There's people can say whatever they want about me, but no one's going to say I'm dishonest. No one's going to say I'm not real. And I just don't think people realize how much trouble they would save themselves just by being that way.
100%. You know,
with friendships, with love, with everything.
I was going to say, why fight what you are for other people? Like, I was going to say, at some point, like, if you're a weirdo, go find the other weirdos. If you're, you know, this, go find the other thises. Like, they exist. You're not a one-off. Like,
obviously with men, I feel like it's often the lying part is driven by just sexuality alone. Where they'll lie just because they want to get laid I understand the brain of a man because I am one.
But I've been one for a couple of years now, so I absolutely, yes. 34 years and running.
Somebody, this is going to sound crass, but it's honest. Like, someone told me a long time ago, a girlfriend of a musician I played with, she's like, you got to make sure to regularly like get yourself off. You can't walk around with a loaded gun dealing with groupies and girls at shows and so on. And it couldn't have been more true. Like that's as a man, if you're going to be driven, like drug around by your dick, clean that thing out at once a day or twice a day, whatever you need so you can be a reasonable human being, man. Like, there's still dudes that send dick pics to girls that didn't ask for it.
So graphic. I'm gonna go on the record right now. Unsolicited D pics are disgusting and gross.
Never one time in the history of human beings did a woman go, oh wow, that's awesome. I want to see
one of those right now. So yeah, I want to be shocked when I open my phone by one of the most hideous body parts there is.
What you were saying though about love languages, where a man who sends that to a woman doesn't understand the nature of women.
No, but, and then receiving nudes is one of my love languages. So like
100% as a dude, if I have a girl, I want her to send me nudes. We're totally,
it makes me feel seen and thought of. Yep. And it's like, it's not even crass or sexual. Honestly, it literally is. I know you're thinking of me now and wanted to share this awesome thing with me. Like that makes me feel seen. When you say it out loud, people are like, oh yeah, you're a horny pervert. And I'm just like,
it's not only that. I'm definitely going to crush one out whenever I get a picture. Probably. It depends on the girl and the mood and the timing and everything else. Not saying it isn't sexual, but it's also more than that for sure.
Grand scheme stuff.
Because I think women forget that men want to feel wanted as well. Like, it's another
on
thing.
The nose.
You can't say that if you're a guy, but like, it's important to feel wanted. It's not just important to have the girl. Like, you have to know, like, that's a big thing that I think a lot 1,000%. Of women aren't good at.
I co-sign that for sure. Cause that is it's old adage of the whole, I'd rather be lonely than be in a relationship that made me feel lonely.
Yeah. I feel that.
Like, I'd rather be alone than be in a relationship that made me feel like I was alone.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know the exact verbiage, but you know what I'm talking about.
All relationships aren't meant to last. All relationships aren't meant to be forever. And if everyone was honest and communicated, you could come to that conclusion without all the freaking weaponry. You know what I mean?
Well, and no one can take ego out of the freaking. So sometimes a person in a relationship, a couple, whatever, a friend is meant to be in your life for that part of your life.
Right.
Like my former best friend was, we needed each other in our early 20s for sure. That got held on to a little longer than it should have, but I don't wish anyone ill. Right. And then I'm divorced, and Ashley, the former Mrs. Southern, and Mike, her lover, are two of my closest friends. Like, we just decided we were better off as friends in the relationship. We were just like, do you want to fight to try to get back to X, Y, and Z? Or do you just, we're friends. We're better off as friends. And we ended up calling it. We made the adult decision to go and run with it. And it much better than the kids growing up in a loveless home. Got to watch mommy and daddy resent each other. Like, we never got to that point. Where we were like cold shouldering each other for no other reason than fuck that lady. But we avoided that by just being real about the whole situation. And then, and she ended up meeting Mike, and Mike is the shit. Mike is a wonderful human being who treats my children like they're his own. And I have evidence of it now because they have a 1-year-old now.
You want to hear an okay to cry moment?
Go on,
you remember whatever you guys did for the daughter, the dadder, Jesus Christ, it's easy for me to say, the daddy daughter dance,
yeah,
or whatever it was, dude, I bawled my fucking eyes out, man. That was so beautiful to me. And it showed more of your character than anything that I've ever seen, man.
It panned out literally as good as I hoped it would have. That was the thing. It was, so I got to do one solo with her. My very first one was me and her. Yeah. And it was before he was in the picture.
In case anybody doesn't follow you on social media, maybe tell the story of this particular event, how it happened, what you did with.
Oh, so the two videos are pinned on my TikTok, which is McNubs 13, MCNUBS 13. And they're pinned in the top. It's the one where, so there's one where we asked Mike if he would join us at the daddy daughter dance because we wanted him there. And Zoe reads him a letter and picked out flowers for him. We stopped at the store and she, those ones, I need those ones, picked out the flowers to get him. And it was a whole thing. And the internet was all freaking excited about it. But, I just wanted to show people that you can do it if you take the ego and the nonsense out. I mean, these are probably good people. At one point, you loved the woman in the equation. So, like, you can't get back to a point when you're homies, especially for the kids. And again, we didn't have bad blood to trudge through to clean up or nothing. We literally just, it was as clean a break as it can get. So we cheated a little in the grand scheme of being excellent co-parents because, again, it was a very clean break. And then, and then Mike, God, she has excellent taste in men. me and him have a lot of similarities, and it's funny. I joke all the time that she just replaced me with an entire man who can grow a beard because he's a big buff dude with all his limbs and can grow such a glorious Leonidas-y beard. It's such a good one. But we both speak in movie quotes and stuff like that, but we play a game this week on Ashley has a type. And so every once in a while, we'll just be like, this week on, because like, I hate onions sometimes too, or like whatever it is, like just some weird, obscure thing that we both realized is so similar.
Right.
I had decided that I wanted to ask Zoe if she'd be cool with that. Obviously, she was all about it. It was a 50s theme. So we decided on greasers and she put on the poodle skirt and it was the cutest shit ever. We did the actual dance video that is also pinned on my TikTok. But it was a really good time. And the reason I posted this shit was just because I wanted people to see you can do it. Like, you can absolutely treat this man who's going to help raise your children with love and respect. What else are you going to do?
Let's think about the most important part of that, and that's your daughter. How that made her feel, how she perceives everything. It's unbelievable how many people would do the opposite, hold on to it out of bitterness, you know, No, I was just going to say, just the root of so many issues is just people's own insecurities
and ego. That's what I'm saying. If you can cut out your bullshit and just make it literally make it about the kids. And if you've got to make your sacrifices and do X, Y, and Z, you're not going to do that for your children. It's not. Right. Even if me and him were on bad terms, our job as the parents, as the adults in the equation, is to bury that hatchet and get to a point where there is equilibrium. Like, if there is beef, address it. Let's get it squashed. Let's grill it up. Let's eat it. Let's go, because it ain't us. I'm not trying to be dear friends with both of them and hang out and go out on the weekends. But like, I need to know the ins and outs of what they're up to, because they have my kids half the time. And his fam, he comes from amazing stock. His family, his mother, stepfather, father, stepmother, everyone I've met, uncles, aunts, everybody just treats my kids like they were their blood too. And again, I have evidence, because they have a 1-year-old, Landon, and he's awesome. He loves his Uncle Ty. And just, I couldn't have asked for a better situation, to be honest. So, I mean, just like the getting blown up being one of the best things that ever happened to me.
Yeah.
Because my kids exist. Because me and my now ex-wife started dating after I got injured. I have good, bad luck. Bad, good luck. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen to me. But I'm going to smell like roses at some point.
I can really relate to that story, because my dad was gone when I was pretty young. Didn't have a whole lot to do with me in my young years, but she married a man who's my stepdad, who's one of the most selfless, kind, best human beings I've ever known. And I was terrible to him when I was fucking 14, dude. I was absolutely a shitty kid, but still to today, one of my absolute favorite human beings on the planet. He's just a person that makes me want to strive to be a better person. He's always been selfless and done for me and my family and done for my kids. And I couldn't even say enough words to express how much I love this man. But so I see that, you know, if you feel all those things, or when you say his family treats your kids like their own, I was the same. I got that.
Yeah. And I love that for you, that you had that. That's amazing to hear, because that is not always the story. One of my closest friends had a stepfather, had a step parent that beat the crap out of them.
Yeah.
And I'm just, I mean, which is, that's probably the tale that's more often more true. And probably, I hate that. I don't understand how you could fold into a family unit especially as a man, and come in there and start throwing your weight around like that. Yeah. Like, I have no idea. I mean, if I end up with someone who already has a kid, I'm gonna get to know the kid effort. I mean, I'm gonna put time, effort, energy, love into getting to know the child and having a relationship that is going to be ours. Right. Because I mean, that's part of, so with Landon, I'm excited to like video games and movies and that kind of stuff is going to more than likely be me and Landon's thing. But with the other kids, Mike and Damon and Zoe, they have, he's a huge baseball guy. And obviously I'm not going to take him to the park and play catch. Not because I don't want to, it don't go so well. But so he'll have, when
you throw with a nub, it goes rogue.
Well, I mean, I can do all right. I threw left-handed in real life, so I can get it over there. Okay. But getting it back is the problem.
You're not Jim Abbott. Remember Jim Abbott?
I do. I have a video that you'll be impressed by then.
Of me playing catch with somebody on my prosthetics. But yeah, they have sports, so they'll have that. Zoe's a gymnast right now. And he's also a musician, Mike is. So like anything like that. So, you know, if they want to learn an instrument or something like that, that'll end up being a Mike and the kids thing. And right. I love it because, you know, I love music, but I can't show them how to do anything. And I right. would never cripple my kids' experience right. by being like, no, you can't show them that. What are you talking about? That's my, I'm the dad.
Like, which again comes back to ego and insecurity.
All kids need are good, strong, or healthy relationships. That is it. Like, well,
that's the other thing. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, like, if it's with your mother, her mother, a grandma, a cousin, or whoever, if it's just a family friend, you're calling Uncle Steve. Like, it's just like they need good and healthy relationships. That's what they need. So if you're gonna if you're going to sever one, or try to cripple it, or put filters on it, you're a fucking asshole. Like, and you are letting your bullshit get in the way of your children's growth.
Yep. Well, you also at some point have to at least put some responsibility on the mother or the father that brings the partner in that isn't a good parent to their children. Like that's for me, that's like an absolute dead stop. Like, if you're not, you don't get along with my kids, or you aren't good to my kids, I don't give a shit how great we are. Like, it's irrelevant.
Absolutely, 100%. That's another, again, the how I almost damn cheated. I had it too easy because, again, the first guy after me, my replacement, is this glorious, wonderful guy with all his limbs.
Yeah.
So many limbs, bro. Fucking four of them.
Fucking all the limbs, bro.
And he's so buff. It doesn't matter how strong I get. He's just... again, which is funny, because Zoe's all like, I can't beat you in an arm wrestle, Mikey. And I'm like, you know how you can't beat me in an arm wrestle? He's stronger than me. Like, you got, he's the final boss if we're going with strength shit. Like, so yeah, you got to get through me to get to him anyways. But I lost it. Go.
So this is just kind of changing the topic since we're kind of running into over the hour now.
Holy hell. Look at us.
What was your childhood like?
Well, short the first time. solid American childhood. I mean, it was not exactly white picket fences and shit, but like, again, dad served I was born in 89 and he ended up retiring from the Navy in 97. So I ended up, we moved a little. So I wasn't even like the had to go to a million different schools, Navy brat. Right. I ended up doing first and half of second grade in Aberdeen, Maryland, 30 minutes outside of Baltimore. And other than that, I was in Jacksonville. I did all my growing up in Jacksonville, Florida. Mom's a nurse. Dad was in the Navy. And then when he got out, he was in sales because he was a recruiter for 11 years. And people always, you know, I have a mouth on me. Y'all going to gather fans. Eventually he's going to have to be like, shut up for a sec. Cause I do my tangents and I got it from my father. Learned first aid and always dressed up for Halloween, and they would go around with us until we were old enough to do it ourselves. And they let us have the freedom to go be dumb kids. Got lost in a blizzard in first grade and thought I was going to die. It was as run of the mill as it gets, really. I've just, you know, whatever beef you have with your brothers that you're going to have, I had. Beef with extended family that ends up happened. That kind of stuff. I had excellent grandparents. I had one set. Again, my father's parents died when he was really young. So I had my maternal grandparents for my whole youth. Ended up losing them right at the end of my youth there when I was about to. My grandmother passed when I was in SOI. So in the fall of 07, and then, my grandfather, I was wounded, by the time he lost it to Alzheimer's. But he was in a nursing home right down the dang street. So I got to go see him all the time.
That's awesome.
And it just ended up being two vets talking, cause he was in the Navy as well.
and was a musician. So we were just two vets talking about Korea and war and music because he didn't know who the hell I was from Adam. I'm tangenting again, but my childhood was solid. It was
the great American childhood.
Yeah. I busted up some stuff, got some cuts and bruises and a couple different head injuries.
Yeah.
But yeah. And then, joined the military when I was still a kid.
So we talked about, the event that led to you being, one fourth limbed.
Down three for you. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Why is that not the name of the podcast?
Hey, I brought it up.
Down three for you.
Literally arrow down, number three, number four, letter U.
Dude, that would have been awesome. Hey. Anyway, so as the last thing, since the accident or whatever you would call that, when it happened.
Yeah.
By the way, I don't know how many people know about the license plate on your van.
Or my motorcycle. So the motorcycle is Kablamo. Yeah. K-A-B-L-A-M-O. Well, zero, because there's no O's on license plates. And then my van is W-N-T-B-00-M, so Wint Boom. And the thought process was always just someone's going to pull up behind this brawn van that absolutely has a ramp on the back, and they're going to be like,
oh, what happened to that guy?
Or when I drive by, they're going to see my arm in the gas and brake and be like, oh my God, what happened to that guy? And then they'll see the license plate and be like, oh, he went boom. And it's just, I'm helping people, you know, got to answering questions.
Why does everybody in your story talk like Quagmire?
It is it's a military thing too. When you're talking about an idiot, everyone's got kind of the same like kind of voice that they'll do. I think it's a cultural thing, and I think it was the military's fault rather than my overall Caucasianness.
That's funny. Yeah, that was one of the first things somebody told me they were kind of telling me about you. I guess Bachman, he told me that, and I'm like, oh, I fucking love this dude immediately. Like we're immediately friends.
Teehee.
And then shortly thereafter, I talked about your wiener in a stage full of people, in a room full of people from the stage.
When I tell you, we need to just not do that here.
I won't do the same. I'm just referring to that particular event.
Oh, which I know. Y'all's shows is ridiculous. I'm just like
one of the funniest things I've ever done. But
that is not. Anyway,
as far as now, what are the biggest challenges, or what have been the biggest challenges for you?
Physical day to day stuff, or just in general.
Either or, just what things you really like deal with on a regular basis that bother you, or that and I mean bother you in terms of not like normal people where they really get bothered, because I know you handle shit differently.
Well, I don't know. I'm at a point now where driving anywhere gets under my skin a little bit, and I know there's so many runs I got to make just to be a father. So I'm not doing any unnecessary driving around anymore. But getting in the van is its own little gymnastics thing too. I can roll up into the back and lock the chair in, get down, climb up to the front and do kind of a little flippy move into the front seat, get the gas and brake lined up, start driving. So it's a little bit of a workout anytime I have to get in or out of the van.
Yeah.
And then when I have wheelchair trouble, gets under my skin too. If you know, something bends, breaks, snaps, and I got to be in a spare, and just the whole, I can't just go to the store and get another one. I've got to go through the VA, or if it's my running around chair, I got to go through the charity that gave it to me. Those things are really aggravating. On the mental side of it, I'm in a really great place as far as my injuries and stuff go. Mainly just cause I vaguely remember what it was like to be an entire person. Like I don't think about what my feet are doing right now. I'm not worried about it because they ain't been there for 13 years.
That makes sense. I feel like everybody kind of lives many lifetimes.
Yeah. And I do. Yeah. And that's why I always say back in real life,
like, because I'm on borrowed time now. But yeah, either back when I was short the first time, when I'm talking about being a kid, or when it's anything to do with pre-blast stuff, I usually just say back in my real life.
Because this ain't real life.
Just the little phrases I end up using. But I do my best to stay physically active and get my workouts going, so that, because at a certain point, if I've done it, I've atrophied, I've let myself go to where, and if my core is loose and can't, rolling over in bed becomes a Herculean task. Like, so if I don't keep a base level of core strength at the very least, and I got to keep the glutes right because my hip will start sucking. Like, there's a lot of stuff that I have to do preventatively.
Right.
Because I'm guaranteed hip arthritis, as of like a year ago. So like, I should have it already. And there's a lot of stuff that's just going to go wrong being seated for a living. So right. I do my best to stay active and work out and things like that. As far as emotional stuff, I do get lonely. I haven't found the right one yet, which is aggravating and can get under your skin sometimes when you're alone watching, you know, binge watching something because the kids are at Mike and Mommy's house. And I hermit sometimes, and I'll stay in the house and realize that I didn't leave once in the week I didn't have the kids. Which ultimately I justify just by I'm chilling, I'm decompressing, I'm getting good so I can give them my best 100% of the time. Yeah. Sometimes you need a break. And now I get one every week. So if I'm having a rough week with the kids, I got to white knuckle it, because on Wednesday I can chill. And, you know, I try not to break out the yelling fits, and I want everything I'm upset about to have a lesson and affirm this is why it was wrong. And I worry about those things a lot. Most of my worry ends up being making the fallen proud and being a good father. And beyond that, I kind of just make it work.
Yeah, nothing. I mean, I've got worries like you've got worries, whether it were regular life shit, but being a dad stands above everything, man.
100%. Yeah, I was going to say, at the end of all of it, in my December, when I'm about to call it, I want to have been remembered for loving the shit out of my kids.
Yep.
That I need that to be step one. I need that to be the first thing people think of is fuck, he loved his damn kids. And you know, try to pour as much of myself into them and leave the shitty parts up here.
Yeah.
Try to make them better versions.
No, it makes sense, man. I was just thinking about it earlier. I was talking to somebody, this girl whose parents left. Her dad left when she was like 16, and her mom basically chased him. And they just weren't involved with her life past 16 years old, pretty much. And I'm like, forget anything in my life, man. Like, I've already made sacrifices, as many as I could, to be in my kids' lives and be a father. But I can't imagine knowing there's a human being that just isn't going to be the same because of either things that you do or things that you don't do. Mm-hmm. And it's a terrifying proposition being a parent, because it's both the most rewarding and incredible thing with the largest consequence of all. I don't, if my life's fucked up, it's one thing, but if you fuck your kids up, imagine that feeling. You know what I mean?
I mean, there's things that they're going to get either way. There's going to be traumas or things you handled wrong or whatever, but at no point is either of my children going to say, my father was never there. My father never hugged me. My father never told me he loved me or was proud of me. My father hit me. None of the big ones are ever going to come out of my kid's mouth on a couch somewhere, because it's not going to happen.
There's no roadmap for any of us. Mm-hmm. And anybody that thinks they know the right way to parent is full of shit. Like,
you take what your parents did and you adjust it.
Right.
Do what you didn't like they did, and do your best.
And I'll come full circle on this, but like, when I used to coach hockey, it was incredible how different everyone needed to be motivated. And when I was a manager of a retail store, like, everyone's so entirely different. Some people need to be pushed with intensity. Some people need to be pushed with love and care. And it's the same with your kids. They can be from the same DNA and need entirely different things. And it's
so that literally. Oh, sorry.
No, I was.
What was your last?
I don't even.
As a leader in the Marine Corps, same thing. Like I had a guy that if you yelled at him, he didn't hear shit you just said. And that's how I am. Because that was how my father communicated stuff when I was younger. It was all bellowed. And I don't, my brain figured out how to just, no idea what just happened or what was said. And it was a problem at boot camp because sometimes I didn't know what the hell they were yelled at us because my brain just shut it out. But yeah, you had to learn what was what. And like you had the one guy who needed to be PT'd hard. You had the one guy who needed it yelled at his face. Like he had to feel the fact that he did wrong. And you had the other guy that if you didn't break it down Barney style and like chill, he wasn't getting it. And that's the same thing with mine. Damon's on a spectrum. So there's a whole slew of things that we have to do differently or like it, he either won't keep it. It won't help him. Like it's just whatever. And then, so hitting him was never a thing. We popped Zoe. Cause she got my mouth. Probably attitude from both sides. I like to joke. She got her mother's attitude in my mouth, which is a terrible combination really when you think about it. With her popping her worked, it did something. And then now all you gotta do is count down, count to three. And she by 2.5, she's moving. I haven't had to pop her on the leg or anything in a long time. And it was never a show of force. It was just a quick little, you done messed up. Yeah. Damon, he didn't register pain like she did. So it would literally be like, you like hitting your son. That's what that is. Cause he'd just look at you like, what? Like, and I'm like, ooh, okay, this is not how we're doing that with this one. So yeah, with him, it was, we had to figure out how to talk through it or take this away, put a timer on that. And with her, it was more force in giving her the downright of why.
Yeah, it's and like I said, there's no roadmap, there's no book. It's all on the fly shit.
I'm all winging it.
my daughter says something, and it's a Bill Burr quote, but it always makes me laugh, dude. She tells people constantly that I hug the stripper shoes off of her.
I was gonna say if that's the main thing that you ever hear out of anyone in that profession, which no judgment, but
no.
Daddy issues and my dad didn't love me or wasn't there and like it led to this, then I'm helping the chances for my daughter to not do that. Like, which again, I'm not judging anyone who does it, but as a father, I'd love it if she didn't do it.
And I think they understand. I'm friends with a lot of, and I've dated a couple of dancers and I have nothing but respect for them. But I think they would agree that like, some of them love the lifestyle and I'm cool with that too. Like it isn't from a place of pain or problem, you know, but the joke's still funny regardless. They at least 100%. Get the point of the joke. But
I hope so.
Yeah. You never know, man.
Life is pain. If you can't laugh about it. Fuck.
For real. Well, I mean, I hope as we're kind of, you know, closing this thing out, I think it's a good time to bring that up. Like I want this to be serious, but I also want it to be humorous. I want it to be lighthearted. It's like when we bring these people on and talk about things, we're going to get into some subjects that are really dark and
uncomfortable.
You know, right. Very uncomfortable in it. And I hope we can all kind of, like I said, do that lightheartedly in a sense and sort of just make it take the stigma away from it a little bit where we can talk about shit that happens.
Life hurts. That's literally all it is. Life is different versions of pain. And if you don't live it and find the bright sides and find the things to smile about or the things to do that bring you joy, then at the end, you're just going to have been in pain for however many years. Like you got to live so hard that the good outweighs the bad by the time you're done.
I think it's, you know, people live in such different, again, back to the lenses things where they view things differently. I'm the kind of person, a lot of people will consider me someone who will say off-color jokes, and I'm sure they're going to come out on this podcast over the years. But
you did a really good one earlier.
Yeah, it's never with the intention of hurting anybody, or it's never with the intention of meaning anything. It's literally just a joke. And sometimes the most uncomfortable things are the things I disarm with humor. You know, I find that joking about things that are difficult, but you disarm a lot better than I do, but
I got permanently disarmed.
Yeah. I just hope people can understand that and take the lightheartedness of it. And, you know, when you say things that are intended to be funny, sometimes they don't come across that way, or certain people won't feel that way. I'm just the kind of person that believes that anything can be joked about if it's funny.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, that's the, if you write the joke, right. If you put the thought into it, you can't just be like, huh, look at that. And just say some horrible thing. You guys are weird. I was going to say it's always intent. That's all of it. Racism or dark 100%. Humor, pushing too hard, or anyone being offended. It's all intent. If it bothered you, but you knew I was joking and it was literally to elicit a funny, you need to chill out, because obviously I wasn't trying to piss you off. Like, you can, right. If it was that far and you need to pull me aside and be like, hey, let's maybe not joke about that. And I'd be like, all right, my bad. And I just would never do it in front of that person again.
Right. And the thing about it is, it's just like listening to music or watching a movie. Not everybody gets everything. Not everyone agrees or loves everything.
It's all subjective.
Right. So that being said, it's like sometimes when you're trying to be funny, you take chances on shit and it doesn't work. You know, that's part of the comedian world of being a comic, is like, that's just the way they live. And I respect it. I enjoy it. I almost like whenever someone says something that I think's over the line and sort of offends me, because I'm like, holy shit.
Oh no.
Shit,
yeah. There's several people. Well, 'cause again, if you take the time to write it right and like layer it up and make it clever, hell yeah. Yeah. You can say whatever the hell you want. Like,
yeah,
because again, agree. You took the time and the passion to make sure it came off good and funny, as opposed to just saying some crazy shit for shock factor.
Well, like, unfortunately, you got to sometimes try that in front of people and fail at it to figure out what are the right words to say to make it funny.
You know, again, that's everything. You just,
pretty
try,
much.
Fail, try again, fail better.
Yeah, well, just
never stop.
I expect over time we're gonna get better at our identity. You know, mm-hmm. I've been working or thinking about this for a decade now, and over a year into this equipment and getting this thing started, and Brian and Lance getting frustrated, and you probably getting frustrated with the time it's taken. But I think in the end it's worth it. And I hope, and I expect the first episodes will be good. I think this is fine. I think it'll get better. I think we'll have guests. I'm not sure we're doing the drink thing where we have people drink at the beginning or however we were talking about, but we can
bring in different shticks and gimmicks eventually. Don't matter.
Yeah. I just want to try different stuff and try different formats and just kind of see what works and let people, you know, share their opinions and whatever. But I hope that it's an interesting enough conversation that people stick through the whole thing. And I know it's kind of long form. Not everybody's got an hour and a half, but the cool thing about podcasts is that you can pick right back up where you left off. It's not the radio. You can listen to a half an hour and come back and catch a half an hour tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. And then they're trying new stuff and winging it and seeing what we can make happen.
Right.
All comes back to only judge me for my good ideas and not my bad ones. 'Cause we're going to try some stuff that's probably not going to work. Like,
right.
But we're going to try all kinds of stuff, and a lot of it's going to land too.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a good feeling about it. I also think, we talked about a little bit, but I just want to let anyone know who's stuck around and listened to the whole thing that through the app that we use, I can actually put you on as a viewer, and you can talk to us in a chat in the window that we're using to talk to each other. So we're thinking about after the first couple podcasts, doing like a Q&A. I don't know if it'll actually be a podcast. Might just do it as a recording in the same setting and let people get on and, I don't know, just talk, ask questions, share thoughts, whatever. Yeah. Just
ask whatever you want.
I was kind of
off limits.
Right. I was kind of thinking that'd be cool to do, you know, once a month, once every couple months, whatever. Like, just let people
at least quarterly. I'd be very excited to get audience or viewer, listener feedback. Kind of as often, well, not as often as we can, but relatively often. I'd absolutely hate people to be sitting on something that they either want to suggest to us or ask us or whatever.
Right.
So yeah, at least every quarter, do like a fans symposium kind of deal.
Yeah, yeah. And I was talking, I know Brian and Lance are getting some equipment, so we're going to start doing, I suggested to them we should do like a, you know, whether it's quarterly, monthly, however often, some kind of SFH update, just kind of shed light on what you guys are doing, where you're going to be and what you have done, because I know you're doing a TV spot down in Jacksonville pretty soon, right?
Yes.
10th or something, maybe?
November 10th.
Marine Hopefully that's all right to talk about. I don't know.
Oh, no, yeah, it's good. Yeah, we're going to be on the news in Jacksonville. I can't remember the exact channel and stuff right now. But yeah, the November 10th, I will get back to you on the other stuff.
I'm sure you'll have it on your social media and shit. I'll probably post it too, just because I know you guys are going to mention the podcast. Yeah, it'll be cool. I'm looking forward to everything we're working on. And we're, you know, as we were talking about before we got on, that we're discussing joining a podcast network from the West Coast and getting involved with them, which could be really cool. Bring us some different types of guests and things that I'm looking forward to. As far as everybody 100%. Else listening to this, we're going to start. I'm going to draw up a schedule. We're going to start scheduling guests here this week. And, you know, we've got a few. We definitely want more. Anybody that wants to share their story or hop on and, you know, share what they go through, don't be afraid to do it. We're going to be vulnerable the entire time that we're on here, both of us.
Oh yeah. We're going to get into some stuff.
Yeah, dude. I hope people feel comfortable enough to come on and share whatever the fuck they've been through, because everybody's got a story. Yep. And that's really what we're here for, just interesting conversations and giving people the opportunity to share. Yes. I think that's a big thing, man. Like, it's a big thing to my healing, and which is a constant work in progress, is being able to talk about it and share it and being able to be public about it and use whatever little platform I have to, to give people, to let, make people feel less alone in what they're going through. It's really important to me.
That's a huge, yes, that's a big, huge plus for me too, is anyone who thinks that no one's going to get it, or you're going through this very specific thing that you don't want to talk about. Just we would be honored if you would share with us, and we'd be very excited to listen to your story and lend any perspective we may have on aspects of it.
100%.
But at the very least, you would leave knowing that we cared and you're not alone, because anyone and everyone is going through something, and I don't want anyone to think they're doing it alone.
No. And just to reflect back on something you said earlier in the podcast, I don't want anyone to be intimidated by what you've been through or what I've been through. It's irrelevant.
Please.
Like it means nothing to what you're going through. That it could be similar. It could be completely different. You can come on and tell a story of an event that happened where you almost died or you went through something horrific. We'll have, I think anything regarding survivors and mental health in general,
100%.
Are good subjects. So
yes. And and it's not a competition. I said it earlier when we were talking about it earlier, it is not a competition. So if you have some sort of injury that is not as egregious as mine, that's not what I'll be thinking when you talk about it. Cause you started out life one way and you are now handling it this way.
Yep.
And you're having to do it differently than I did. So you're already at a point in life that I've never been in. Therefore, I'd like to hear about it, and I'd love to see if I can help you through it.
Yep. Same here, man. Well, I think it's a good time to call it a day. You can hang on here for just a minute. If I can get my mouse to work. Yay. It doesn't work. We will, at least that's the only tech thing that broke today.
Hey,
yeah, we will. I think we're going to do the second episode here in a day or two. And hopefully post this one within this week, and then the next one Tuesday. Our schedule is going to be every other Tuesday starting next Tuesday. That's the technical schedule. So we'll be releasing these every Tuesday that you have your kids, just by chance or whatever, how we kind of built this thing.
We'll figure it out.
And I would love for it to be, you know, once a week. I would love to get to the point where we've got enough guests and enough content and we're having fun and people are watching. We'll do it more frequently.
Absolutely.
So thank you for listening. If you've stuck around for the whole thing, and we will see you very soon. And as a reminder for what we all go through and what we're all about, we're still fucking here.
Thank y'all for coming out.